or a homecoming, as they put it. But there had to be just a few little changes in the history so that no one would notice that the wrong people were coming home to the wrong place. The reason the Edoms today call themselves Sephardic Jews is to get out of the plan of the Lord, which has been laid for Edom, or is perceived to be laid for Edom. In Genesis 26:34, it says that the Lord will make war with Amalek, which is called Edom, from generation to generation. And John points out that in Exodus, it is repeated. John 8:33, it says, Edom never was in bondage. There were only 12 tribes of Israel, and they were never in captivity in Egypt. And in Numbers 20:20, Amalek, or Edom, came out against captive Israel as it left Egypt, Israel's first war. In Deuteronomy 2:29, the children of Esau dwell in Edom. 1 Samuel 30:17, David from morning to night slaughtered the Amalekites, or the Edomites. And on it goes. And as it mentioned in Who is God, all of the descendants of Sem. Well, I again apologize. I can get from one part of this universe into another in a split second, but I cannot control your contractions. So let us see where we were. Oh, yes. This was all spelled out, quite frankly, in Who is Gog? And where do the ones called Gog come from? All the descendants of Sem, one of the sons of Noah, who are white, are Semites. Semites. The Reformation made that change by calling Sem, Shem, which was appropriate enough. But it does throw you once for one of the proverbial loops. Now, the so-called Sephardic Jews, really Esau, Edom, are white and Semites, then as the Pope said in the synagogue visiting our, quote, elder brothers, then Jacob, Esau's brother, must be white, and he must also be Semite. Wouldn't that make sense? So who are the Caucasians? Interesting question, right? Maybe we'll just leave that there. And remind you that you, me, I are the Semites. And Jews, they, them, however you wish to designate this, and the Khazarians, who call themselves Zionists, are not. Now, I don't believe that you will ever have heard this coming from church. And it's really sad, because the doctrines require that you come into a church society and raise your hand to the book and say, I believe every word in the book. And you, in your zeal, swear that you do, so that you can socially participate with this particular group. And you don't know what you're swearing to. Now we have a little PS to this, which is interesting and thought-provoking. If Herod the Edomite built the temple for his people, who today worships at the Wailing Wall, Jews or Edomites? All the Jews, Judeans, hated Herod because a non-Jew, Herod, ruled them. And they've been waiting ever since to get even. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and I'll take the world too while I'm at it. And therefore you end up in serious trouble because you don't know your history. And I agree with ones who write and say, what business is it of mine? Well, it is my business. I come as one of the hosts to bring the master teacher who has now earned his stripes and is one with God. And this nonsense has gone on long enough on your place. You have brought great damage unto this beautiful, beautiful creation gifted unto you. You were to be stewards, and you have been deceived, and you have become people of the lie. And it's very sad indeed, that it has come to this. But until you can come into balance with that which is, you cannot change that which might be. I believe that on this tape, we have time for me to read a document to you that was sent to me, or at least a portion of it. We'll go as far as we can with it. It's called A Jewish Plan of World Domination. And it's referred to as the Key to the Mystery. In the imminent Paris Review, Les Contemporains, of July 1st, 1880, was published an article under the heading of An Account by Sir John Redcliffe, A Political Historical Events Registered in the Last 10 Years, end quote. The article contained a document purporting to be a lecture given by a great rabbi, Reichhorn, at a second meeting of the Inner Circle of Jewish Leaders in Prague in 1869. Over the tomb of the Grand Rabbi Simeon ben Yehuda. The same document has been published by many places, including by me, over and over, but we're going to do it again. Of course, as could be expected, the Jews have denied the authenticity of that document. The Canadian Jewish Congress, in a pamphlet, published that Reichhorn, who spoke in 1869, did never exist because his name does not appear in the old Jewish cemetery of Prague, closed in 1787. And as an opinion on the spuriousness of the document, they refer to the Jewish Encyclopedia, which also states that the writings of St. Paul are spurious. But as Lord Sydenham, Monsignor Juan, Miquel, Benigni, Henry Ford, and other eminent students of the Jewish question have said of the protocols of the Elders of Zion, we can say that the fatal discourse of Rabbi Reichhorn, here republished, fits events as we see them rolling along today. And Hayatan might add that it also fits all of the other patterns for the Plan 2000. Back to the writing. La Via France, number 214, published that Redcliffe was killed shortly after the publication of the discourse. And also note that this is usually the way things happen. Witnesses begin to disappear rapidly. And that the Jew, Lesalle, who had made it known to him, died in a duel. Hereafter is the text as edited by the Britons, 40 Great Ormond Street, London, England. Quote, "Our fathers have delegated to the chosen leaders of Judah the duty of meeting at least once in each century around the tomb of the great master Caleb, the holy rabbi Simeon ben Jehuda, whose learning passes on to the elect of each generation power over the whole world and authority over all the descendants of Judah. Already now, for 18 centuries, has lasted the war of the people of Judah against this power which had been promised to Abraham, but which has been snatched from him by the cross. Trodden underfoot, humiliated by our enemies, constantly under the fear of death or persecution, of robbery and of violence of all sorts, the people of Judah, however, has by no means succumbed. And if we are scattered over the whole world, it is because the whole world ought to belong to us. Since several centuries back, our learned men have been fighting bravely and with a perseverance which nothing can defeat against the cross. Our people, are gradually coming out on top, and every day our power increases. To us belongs the God of today, which Aaron has raised for us in the desert. This calf of gold, which is now the universal God of the present day. From the moment when we shall have made ourselves sole possessors of all the gold of the world, the real power will pass into our hands, and then shall be accomplished the promises made to Abraham. Gold is the greatest power in the world. Gold, which is force, reward, and the means of all pleasure, all that man fears and covets. There you have the great mystery, the deep knowledge of the Spirit which rules the world. There you have the future. 18 centuries have belonged to our enemies, but the present century and future centuries must belong to us, people of Judah, and will surely belong to us. This is the 10th occasion during the 1,000 years of the incessant and fierce struggle with our enemies that have met in the cemetery by the tomb of our Grand Master Caleb, the Holy Rabbi Simeon ben Yehuda, the elected leaders of Judah, in order to devise means of turning to our advantage the serious mistakes and sins which our enemies, the Christians, are always committing. On each occasion, the new Sanhedrin has proclaimed and preached the fight without mercy against these enemies. But in none of the preceding centuries have our ancestors succeeded in concentrating in our hands so much gold and thus so much power as in the 19th, which was the 18th. or the 1800s. Which has just passed. We can, therefore, flatter ourselves without fear of deceiving ourselves, that we have attained our aim and can look with confidence to the future. The times of persecution and humiliation, those dark and painful times which the people of Judah has borne with such heroic patience, are happily past for us, thanks to the progress of civilization among the Christians. And this progress is the best shield behind which we can hide and work in order to clear with firm and swift step the space which still separates us from our final goal. Let us just cast our eyes over the material state of Europe and examine the resources which the Jews have managed to collect since the beginning of the present century. Solely by the concentration in our hands of the vast capital which we now control at this very moment. Thus in Paris, London, Vienna, Berlin, Amsterdam, Hamburg, Rome, Naples, etc., and among the Rothschilds, everywhere the Jews are masters of the financial situation by the possession of several thousand of millions. This without counting that in each locality of secondary and third-rate importance, there are those who hold funds in circulation, and that everywhere without the sons of Judah, without their direct influence, no financial transaction, no important work can be carried out. Today, all the emperors, kings, and reigning princes are crushed by debts contracted for the maintenance of huge permanent armies to prop up their tattering thrones. The money market tallies and regulates these debts, and we are, to a great extent, masters of the money market everywhere. We must study, therefore, to encourage these borrowings more and more, so that we may make ourselves sole controllers of all markets and, as far as possible, seize for ourselves as security for the capital which we have supplied to the countries the exploitation of their railways, their mines, their forests, their foundries, their factories. Thus also other real estate and even the control of taxes. Agriculture will always remain the great source of wealth in all countries. The possession of large properties carries with it honor and influence to the owners. It follows then that our efforts should be directed towards making Jews large territorial magnates. We must therefore hasten the breaking up of these large properties so as to make our acquisition of them more quick and easy. Under the pretense of helping the working classes, we must put all the taxes on the owners of large properties, and when these properties shall have fallen into our hands, all the work of the workers and Christians, proletariat, will become for us the source of immense gain. Poverty is slavery, has said a poet. The proletariat is the very humble servant of speculation. But oppression and influence are the very humble servants of the mind which inspires and prompts the cunning. Who then will refuse to the sons of Judah intelligence, prudence, and cuteness? Our people are ambitious, proud, and greedy for pleasure. Where there is light, there is also shade, and it is not without reason that our God has given to his chosen people the vitality of the serpent, the cunning of the fox, the vision of the falcon, the memory of the dog, the solidarity and the congregating instinct of the beaver. We have groaned in the slavery of Babylon, and we have become powerful. Our temples have been destroyed, and we have rebuilt thousands of temples in their place. During 18 centuries, we were slaves, and in the present century, we have risen above all other peoples. It is said that numbers of our brothers in Judah have been converted and baptized Christians. What does it matter? The baptized ones can be very useful to us. They can become our auxiliaries to march to new horizons, which are still unknown to us. For these converted ones still belong to us. And despite the baptism of their bodies, their spirit and their soul always remain faithful to Judah. In a century's time, it won't be the children of Judah who will desire to become Christians, but rather the Christians who will flock to our faith. But then Judah will repulse them with scorn. The Christian church being one of our most dangerous enemies, we must work perseveringly to weaken its influence. We must graft as much as possible on the intelligence of those who profess the Christian religion, ideas of free thought, of doubt, of schism, and provoke religious disputes. So naturally faithful of divisions into sects of Christianity, naturally we must commence by discrediting the ministers of this religion. Let us declare open war on them. Suggest suspicions as to their devotion of their private life. And by ridicule and jest, we shall get the better of the consideration attached to the state and to the cloth. The church's natural enemy is the light, which comes from instruction and is the inevitable result of a multiplication of schools. Let us set ourselves to gain influence over the young pupils. The idea of progress carries with it the equality of all religions, which in its turn leads to the suppression in the school course of lessons in Christianity. The Jews, by subtlety and learning, will obtain without difficulty chairs and positions as professors in Christian schools. By these means, religious education will be left to the family circle. And, as in most families, there is no time to look after this branch of instruction. The religious spirit will weaken little by little and will completely disappear. Each war, each revolution, each political or religious shock which has come to pass in the Christian world brings nearer the moment when we shall attain the goal towards which we are pressing. Commerce and speculation, two factors fruitful in vast gain, must never be out of the hands of the Jews. And first of all, we must make a monopoly of alcohol, butter, bread, and wine. For by that, we shall make ourselves absolute masters of agricultural and of the whole rural economic position. We shall be the distributors of corn to all. But if a certain amount of discontent should come about arising from the misery of the proletariat, it would be easy to throw the responsibility onto the government. All public offices must be open to Jews. And once installed, we shall know how to penetrate right to the foundation head of genuine influence and power. This by means of the activity and astuteness of our toadies, factors. It is to be understood that all this only applies to positions of honor and power and privilege. For as regards those offices which require knowledge, work, and trouble, these must be left to the Christians. The magistracy is for us an institution of the first importance. The career of barrister or lawyer, more than any other, develops the faculty of civilization and brings one in touch with the business of our natural enemies, the Christians. And it is by these means that we are able to get them at our mercy. Why should not Jews become ministers of public instruction when they have so-called held the office of finance? Jews must also aspire to the ranks of the legislators so that they may work at destroying the laws made by the Gentiles, faithless sinners, against the children of Judah, who are the only faithful by constant obedience to the laws of Abraham. For the rest on this matter, our plan is on the point of complete success, for progress has almost everywhere recognized and accorded to us the same rights of citizenship as to the Christian. But what is important to obtain, and which must be the object of our constant endeavor, is a law less severe on bankruptcy. We shall make it a gold mine, far richer than the mines of California were formerly. The people of Judah must direct its ambitions toward the high degree of power, whence flow preferment and honors. The most effective way of getting there is to have a firm hand on all associations, industrial, financial, and commercial, all the while carefully guarding against any trap or temptation which might espouse us to legal process. We must conduct ourselves, therefore, in these kinds of speculation with that carefulness and tact which mark our special aptitude for business. We must be strangers to nothing which gains a position of distinction in society, philosophy, medicine, law, music, political, economy. In a word, all branches of science, art, and literature are a vast field where success must make us bulk big and display our aptitude. These vocations are inseparable and a portion of our intent. I would like to leave this. There's a little bit more, but I've been over it enough, and I would prefer to finish up the remainder of this tape on a little bit more general discussion. Almost as frequently as being asked about Semites versus anti-Semites, I'm asked about the evangelical movement and ones such as Baker, Swaggart, etc. I don't really want to get into great depths of discussions about any particular parties. It's all part of the horrendous plan against mankind. And I think that it's not important to look at individuals as much as it is important to look at the overall structure, the setup, if you will, that confronts you, and how it has been sucked within this massive glob of deceiving. It marches forth on a course of deceit, and it grows bigger and bigger and bigger as it silences you and tells you to believe in that which is totally irrational and yet touches on the truth just enough to hold you captive. This is very serious for you professed Christians, at least the Jews who call themselves Jews, the Zionists, know what they're for. You believe that you are for something which does not exist, cannot exist, and will never exist. They have fooled you again. Worse than that, many of you who right now are listening to this tape will have contributed to the great marathon money-raising scam of the Trinity Broadcasting System, whereby you are paying over $3 million to have access to a satellite. This is so you can open up more evangelical stations throughout the world and preach that which is erroneous and that which was thrust forth through British intelligence. How can I reach you? Through British intelligence. Let me discuss this a little bit farther. Let me just read you a little bit of a dissertation by Eustace Mullins. It comes from his book, The Curse of Canaan, worthy of your attention, precious friends. On page 238, I quote, "Baker and his fellow operators ask no questions about how all this bounty flows to them. They preach against secular humanism and communism without any inkling that their evangelical movement traces directly back to the very forces which they denounce. From 1830 to 1870, Jeremy Bentham's utilitarian socialism dominated English legislation, while a simultaneous program, evangelicalism, was being promoted by the same forces to take over Christianity. Dr. Dale is quoted by A.V. Dicey in Law and Opinion in England, Macmillan, 1924. The evangelicals must encourage what is called an undenominational church. It regarded with indifference all forms of church policy. It demanded common religious teaching and common beliefs. It cared nothing for the church as an august society of saints." End quote. In short, evangelicalism is the forerunner of our present crop of Canaanite propagandists. Was first of all ecumenical, second, it cast aside the spiritual heritage of the church in favor of a robust dedication to fundraising and political propagandizing for goals rarely openly revealed. The Evangelical Alliance was formed in London in 1846. A branch was soon formed in the United States, which was first known as the Federal Council of Church of Christ, and is now known as the National Council of Churches of Christ, a left-wing propaganda group. Yet it shares the same origin as that of the television evangelists who claim to be anti-communists. What is its origin? The evangelical movement was sponsored by the same British intelligence leader, Lord Shelburne, who had directed the French Revolution. Shelburne imported a French radical into England, Etienne Louis de Mont of Paris, who was the disciple of Count Saint Simeon, or Simon, the founder of social science. Dumont's principal English disciple was Jeremy Bentham, now known as the father of utilitarianism. Shelburne had become the power behind Britain's political scene by lending William Pitt, the Prime Minister, large sums of money. After Pitt's death, the British Treasury was obliged to pay off these debts, amounting to £40,000. Because of his international intrigues, Shelburne was the most feared and hated man in England. Now, I don't know how long you will put up with the deceit and the lies. But unless you can come into the truth, there is absolutely no way that you can know your enemy and prevail. If, in fact, you are willing to accept possibilities and listen while it is unfolded unto you that the prophecies are now at hand and that it is the time of the cycle changes and the ending, or actually they believe the beginning of their control of your world and the ending of your world as you know it. You are caught in the trap and you will be unable to extricate yourself. This is the time of the coming again, of the reclamation, of the migrations, of the ending of the great cycle, according to your own historical myths. I can offer you only that which I bring. That is the word. For you were promised by Creator in this time of the ending chaos that the word would be brought forth unto your planet, that it might go forth unto the man of the planet Earth, that he might have the truth by which to measure his choices of his divinity and his progression. That is my mission. My mission is to bring truth. My mission as host is to bring with me the brethren that prepare the way for the great coming of the Creator Source, so that there can be a great cleansing and a great migration of the people of Creator. It is not mystical. It's very real. You are coming out of this illusion that has entrapped you in the physical lust and greed of civilization. And many civilizations have come and gone, always due to the same irrational, unreasoning behavior of the human in his physical state. You are not alone in your journey. Fear cannot be a part of your existence if you dwell within the promise. I shall not be among ones who can do a thing for you. I cannot plan or exert my presence on your progression into your infinite journey. for then the experience becomes my experience and you are deprived of yours. You have been given all the wondrous perfection and wisdom necessary to make this transition in the light of God. It is the time of separation and sorting choices, some very difficult, but you will be given and are being given words of wisdom by which you can function and again come into the memory of the laws as presented to you by Creator to live in balance within creation. I can only offer my hand. I repeat, I cannot do it for you. But when you step into the light and take my hand, I can certainly show you the way home. For we shall prepare this place for again the cycle of light and glory and radiance, whether it be on this barren land which you have ill-nurtured or another placement prepared for you of his people. There will be the remnant. We shall not be stopped. And remember that in the end, God wins. That is as well recognized in the places of darkness as in the places of light. And if you are not aware of it, I suggest you become aware of it and you stop playing your games of hide and I won't get caught and move back within the guidelines laid forth for your journey. Because the time is at hand. And I can continue to write, and I can continue to explain and define, and I shall continue to reach out and do these things. But you must grow into responsibility and confront that which is your heritage before it becomes too late. God bless you. You are cherished. Cherished indeed. Salut and Adonai. Metakyosan. For all my relations. For all your relations. For we are but one in God.